Listen and stream the all-new Talk Radio Freedom 106.5 for the only talk that matter.
Good evening, everyone. Hope you're all out there listening, all you football fans. Here we are in the studio. I've got some tremendous people sat around me. Adrian Romaine, you'll all know, ex-national team manager with me, Trinidad and Tobago, and Andreas Sukkalalu, who's a good friend and a top guy when it comes to football, knows everybody out there, and I'm sure you all know him. So we're getting ourselves set. There's lots to talk about, fellas. And I think tonight, I think we've got to concentrate mainly on the local football, see what's going on out there. The international match that went on last night, Trinidad and Tobago against St. Martin. And also, we've got to look at some of the talent on the ground there, Adrian. What do you think?
Yeah, afternoon to our listeners. I must say that, Terry, that's last night's fixture was really and truly an eye-opener, and that our show will be very interesting today. And with Andrew joining us, Andre and Mr. Marie Gonzalez later on, it will be really and truly all about local football.
Well, I think, Andrea, I'd like you to explain yourself. We've all known you for a long while here in Trinidad and Tobago. Everyone knows you're on the football front. Please just give us a mouthful.
Well, hey, Terry, it's an absolute pleasure to be on the show. So thanks for having me here. Pleasure. And the listeners out there. You know, we're going to try to have some fun today. If I talk about myself, it'll probably take up the entire 2 hours. So I'm going to try to keep it short. My most recent job was, you know, the team analyst and the media officer for the women's national team. And, you know, I also did a lot of the media content for the Knight Riders as well. Plus, I, you know, have my podcast and so on, but I'm heavily involved in the data aspect of games and analytics. Yeah. And, you know, that's my primary passion and what I do mainly in my career, keeping it short.
Just a quick question for you then. So you've operated at different levels, football and cricket.
Mm-hmm.
And yes, you've been involved with the management side of the game here in Trinidad and Tobago, but you've also rubbed shoulders across the board with international people on the outside. Is there a difference? Is there anything else out there? Is there something that we're missing here, or what do you think?
Definitely. Wow. I think we need an entire show for this, for that topic. But there's so many things. I mean, from the sporting aspect, from the way we approach the game, a simple thing, and I'll just keep it simple, the professionalism.
Yeah.
Simple things like just honoring your agreements. It sounds very non-technical, but it's, you know, just being there on time, people playing their positions and doing what they're supposed to do, integrity. That's more on the personal side of things. But from the coaching standpoint, you know, qualifications and so on, the preparation for games, the technology involved in football, the people that know how to use it, advertising, marketing, the business side of it. There's just so many things that we are so far behind. Even the analysis and selection of players at a development level, we are just fundamentally way off by miles, and there's so much things that they do better than us.
Well, I've always thought, you know, the when you look at how sport is moving forward, evolving, the science, the technology that's involved in across the board in all sports today, whether you're a runner or a footballer or a cricketer, whatever you are, there's so much more to the game and the sport than there ever was before. And I just look at some of the kids that we've got here in Trinidad and Tobago. And this is through my local football factory. We've got some wonderful talent there out on the fields trying to do their best. But they're suffering because there's no real development programs. There's certainly not any of the technology and science that the rest of the kids, you know, even in this region, you see what they're implementing now at, you know, kids 7, 8, 9 upwards. And I feel really sad for the kids on the ground here at the moment that they're not getting any. You know, the talent is not getting outside. They're not getting an opportunity to do this better for themselves, Adrian.
Yeah, and that's true, because the reality is the same old guards that keeps holding big positions that's making major decisions in Trinidad and Tobago football.
Slowing it down.
And the reality is if we keep going with these old guards, then the same results we'll be getting, and that's exactly what's happening. For example, an exciting, like, people look forward to seeing Trinidad and Tobago play St. Martin. That is where we have reached. We are actually looking for games against St. Martin and these countries. That is all disrespect. And for me, watching at the game on SportsStream, it was one of our worst performances ever at national level. And we need to be honest. I know the coach has made the excuses of playing time and stuff, but Leland Archer has played a whole season at Charleston Battery, Neville Hackshaw, FC Indiana, and all these guys, and we'll get in depth with it. But the reality is that we need to stop making these silly these comments and start to deal with facts.
Yeah.
And that's our development level is being squeezed, and really and truly it's like a vacuum. We are not getting anything out. Everything is just going in.
Yeah, I think I've seen that myself, Adrian and Andrea. Over the 23 years that I've been here, it's sometimes not actually what you see. And I think when it comes to cultures, you know, Brits tend to put everything on the table one time, where this is how we are, what we're doing, what trying to achieve. But there's so many good people out there. There's people that want to make a difference, people that want to do good things. And unfortunately, they're not, particularly in sport, and I think it spreads across to cricket as well as football. They've had a few issues over the years with the management streams. But I couldn't agree with you more, Adrian. When you listen to a lot of the comments out there, what they're projecting, what they're saying, and it's this madness, there's nothing behind it, there's no strength. Kids on the ground don't see any of it. It's really poor. Andrea, what do you think?
Yeah, it's something, you know, Adrian, you know, kind of tapped on it as well. I think it's not a secret. That's been a problem that's been going on for a long time now. It's been happening for as far since I've been following football, since I was a kid.
Yeah.
The corruption, like I said, it's at all levels. There's people that just need to not be there. They've been there way too long. They're stagnating. They're hampering development, not just with the players, but, you know, in administration, coaches, even the management side of things, Adrian, you know, there's so many things that we are lacking in, which goes back to what I was saying at the beginning, where I know players personally, and they are frustrated. We have conversations all the times where they get to a certain level and they meet individuals, and it's very clear to them. The intelligent kids, they figure out pretty quickly that these people, most of them, usually don't know what they're doing. There are some good people who try to help, but then they're frustrated.
But Andrea, I mean, you know, most communities now have a local academy where somebody for nothing gets out there and coaches and trains the local kids because of the love of the game, the love of the kids, the love of their own communities. Where do we start? How do we turn this around? How do we make them changes?
The thing is, I know, and you know, Adrian, you could probably correct me if I'm wrong with this, but I know FIFA is supposed to have a sort of reward system for a lot of these academies,
right,
if I'm not mistaken, where they try to encourage homegrown players with these same sort of grassroots guys.
Yeah.
And when they get to a certain level, and I think we need to, I guess some of the coaches may not be aware of this. And I think a lot of them, if they are aware of this, they will kind of speak up for themselves a little bit more and maybe defend themselves a little bit more and see their value. Because a lot of these high school teams get these players from the villages and so on. I know a lot of them personally.
Yeah.
But they're not aware of the impact they have on the overall system.
Yes.
And that they can actually be rewarded for this in a legal way.
Yeah.
And I think we speak about the high level coaching education, but I think it needs to go all the way down to these guys and make it available to them. Not just from the tactical perspective and curriculums, but let them know, listen, this is the impact you can have. But then that requires streamlining from the football associations.
Yeah.
And that's where I think the problem begins, because there's a lot of people who on paper for years have been saying the right things, quote-unquote the right things. They love to say development. They say it all the time. We need to start over. We need to start from the grassroots. Sometimes I get fed up of hearing that all the time.
I watch a guy, Jan Lillywhite. He's on the Savannah training his kids on a regular basis. Now, this guy's been around all the while I've been in Trinidad, always doing the same thing. And I look at him, I think, my God, he's done a great job over the years nurturing these kids. And a lot of it is social development, making sure kids are able to communicate with each other, get on with each other, bring them away from their communities, mix with other communities, so we don't have that kid going into gang life and all of the issues and problems that surround it. He's done a wonderful job, and I've just always asked the question, why has he never gone any further than the Savannah? Why hasn't he not been involved with Port of Spain, for argument's sake, with some of the football levels? Why have they just left people like that out of it?
Strangely enough, I think that everything that has basically been around our football, gentlemen, is all about politics. And if you don't have that voting right to be part of to be part of, to vote for who's your next president within the TTFA.
Yeah.
I don't think your employment is valid. And if we, this can be a whole show, because the reality is we will speak about Dada, who has done tremendous at Trendsetter Hawks.
Yes.
We will speak about Ramdu, who has done tremendous in Long Circular. Jalili White, he has been around for ages.
Yeah.
These guys have played a major part in our youth development.
Yes.
But they have been ignored. Don't have step by step that is in an elite league, and he don't have the voting rights.
Right.
We don't have Jalili White in an elite league, and he don't have voting rights. So it's a big topic where sometimes I am young and passionate about my country and to see us grow. But it's really and truly, it's triggering me, because the reality is there is no one that is really and truly stepping up to say, okay, it's time to get the old heads out.
Yeah.
Get some new ones. Get new people who is definitely, who wants to see Trinidad and Tobago football grow.
So it's all politics again.
It's
here,
John. Politics.
You see, I mean, you've mentioned it there yourself, and out with the old guard, bring in some new, and the voting rights. My God, I'm looking at Richard Ferguson, who's been putting his foot into different areas, regions, zonal teams, this, that and the other. And from the outside looking in, it looks like he's already cherry-picked certain people to run different organisations. So when that new vote comes around, he will be the guy, potentially, that could be the next president of the TTFA. Now, when I look at that, I know there's going to be a clash of... clash at the top of the TTFA, because there are other sources that would rather be there. And the disappointment here is it's relatively negative. And I like to base everything that you're doing, particularly with kids, and that's what we're dealing with here. It's the kids that unfortunately will pay for it in the long run, when we haven't got good kids getting out of Trinidad and Tobago into better leagues in and around the world. And that's whether it's into professional leagues or whether it's scholarships at colleges in the US. But it's really frustrating to me as well there that we've not got people that are looking at after the right intentions of these youngsters.
Yeah, and we'll keep saying every day that there's a big gap in terms of development. There's a big gap in terms of plans. I have seen persons held positions even in the TTFA for years. I think when I was a newborn, even at SSFL level as well, I've seen it. And it's very sad, because when I, as a young man, because I'm talking about my experience, get into that environment and I decide to do what's right, then I am under pressure, because the reality is they do not want the ones that is doing what's right. They want the ones that is following suit of the bad apples that continues to hurt our football. And they do not see it as hurt.
Yep.
They do not see it as hurt. They see it as gains for their pockets and ego in terms of holding a big position. But the reality is that is not something that ever stuck in my head in terms of holding a position. What stuck in my head is seeing Trinidad and Tobago develop and see our youths get a proper opportunity. And every day, it's the same old again.
So, Adrian, I've got to drag you back there a second, because for the last 2 or 3 years, we've been under the control of the Normalisation Committee, who are actually supposed to bring football back to normal. And all of the same things that you're asking should be back to normal. We should be playing games, leagues, and I'm not seeing it across the board when you look at football in general. If it's not the schools association playing their league tournaments, you're not seeing anything at all out there. And I think the politics that's creeping the game there is spoiling that. And the Normalisation Committee, what have they done? How have they impacted the game? I'm not seeing anything coming from them. And it might be their game plan to keep everything low-key, keep everything undercover. Football's a global sport. It's what everybody wants to get involved in. We're all watching TV, whether it's Premier League, Champions League, World Cup we've just had. It's an amazing game that drags these youngsters away from their families onto the community grounds where they're playing with each other to do better for themselves, to possibly get out of Trinidad and Tobago, to a better quality of football and life. When you recognise the monies that are generated in football and soccer today, it's huge. And these kids, not only looking after their families, some of them are looking after their whole communities. When you look at Sonny Mardy, that used to play for the Liverpool,
He's
looking after a whole community back there in his home country because of the monies that he's earning as an individual for Bayern Munich today. Now, they're great stories, but, you know, and I look at, my God, it's going back a few years now, but when Jack Warner was in control of the TTFA, when he was the advisor, yes, of course, he had one or two people that were up against him, but he was very clever. He gave them jobs. He shut them up by giving them jobs and allowed the things to roll on. And then we had a very big impact from corporate Trinidad. Businesses were getting involved, and of course, 2006, getting to World Cup with Leo Benacca. It was fantastic, and that was a best 6 months I think I've ever had, from November qualifying through to World Cup finals. What a wonderful time it was in Trinidad and Tobago, and the whole country. It wasn't at all PNM, UNC. It was everybody together, enjoying life together, getting on, supporting the team, wearing your colours. It was fantastic, Andrew.
Yes, I remember that. I could never, ever forget. I'm getting my paws raised when you were talking about that, because that's something that seems so far away now.
Yes.
You know, there was a time where none of these issues we were speaking about, you know, came to the forefront of any discussion. The average fan, they were just looking at what they were seeing on the screen. Like, we have a little bit of inside knowledge about what goes on. But to the average person on the street, they're looking at a game, Trinidad made it. And, you know, it's a far cry. And there were things that were irregular then, but, you know, fast forward to now, seeing all the irregularities. And you mentioned corporate sponsorship. You know, football, you need money to run this is a business.
Yes.
And the ability to attract, you know, corporate sponsorship and people that would trust the organization is something that has been lost. People, you know, they raise their eyebrows when they look at anything with Trinidad and Tobago. You know, I mingle with a lot of these people.
Yeah.
There's an audience, a demographic of people that have just been alienated from football. They have no interest because they immediately associate Trinidad and Tobago and they just say corruption. And, you know, it's truly a heartbreaking thing for people who love the game. You know, like Adrian, we do this because we love the game. This is a very thankless, you know, environment we're in. We wouldn't do this if we didn't love what we were doing.
Yeah.
There's so much more lucrative things to do. But the fact is that we could no longer attract that because of all the, you know.
Well, there's got to be, Andrew, there's got to be changes. And I think, you know, personally, I look at the youngsters. I look at the qualities that we've got on the grounds there. My young football factory is playing games against other teams. And I'm seeing youngsters from different academies, from different places, different communities that are quality.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm thinking these kids need to be in a program now to give them a chance when they're 15, 16 to get out on a scholarship or even a professional contract because they've got that ability. And I think one of the first things that I noticed when I came here back in 2000 was the general makeup of Trinidadians, men, are, you know, very athletic, very quick, speedy. It was like, wow, that's something I'd not seen before. And they're good on the ball because the surfaces have not been great. Their touch was always, and I look at somebody like an Otis Whitley.
Yeah.
That was just an amazing player. I mean, I look at him. I played alongside Paul Gascoigne, who I think at one time was the best player in the world.
Hmm.
And Otis Whitley had all the skill sets, possibly better than Gazza.
Hmm. Wow.
It was unbelievable. Yeah, he could do anything with the ball. He was brilliant. Didn't have quite the background, didn't have that academy growth that you see the kids that have today. You know, recognising that these youngsters today, by the time they hit 12, 13, 14, they're young professionals. That's all over United States of America now. That's all over Europe and South America now. They're cherry-picking all these top players from these communities and putting time and effort and good coaches into there. I suspect over time, and I've preached this for a little while now, Adrian, that we'll not see as many Ronaldos anymore, any Messis coming out there, because these kids are almost now programmed for specific positions.
Yeah.
And that position has got to be doing X, Y, and Z in that position for the benefit of the team. So it's all about technology and the science of football into these youngsters to create. Trinidad are miles behind that. You know, Adrian and I asked for a football science lab so we could have all of the same things, so we could bring things forward, have these straps on the guys, so we could monitor what their work ethic was whilst they were training and playing. We couldn't get that. It's we're falling behind the times, and I think some of the islands now are doing it. I know out of South America, you've got multiple coaches coming out of Argentina that have coached up the islands and into Central America. I think it's fantastic because they've got not just great teams, great players, they've also got excellent coaches that we should be taking advantage of. But we've got to find a way out of this for the kids. We've got to find a way forward, something positive that they can look at. What's your thoughts, Adrian?
Yeah, Terry, rewinding your statement regarding the normalization committee.
Yeah.
I think that that was the idea, why they came here.
Yeah.
In terms of to put some stability within our football. But the reality is they have, all respect to Robert, and they have basically rotated more than even put in stability. So, for example, Angus Eve contract is ending in March 31st. This is the first job I've seen that there is no negotiations happening. You're not hearing anything. Kenwin Jones and his staff. I think after that scenario, the World Cup qualifiers, I don't think they ever met after to have conversations. Even the women under 20s, the under 17s, that never happened. So it's a continuous thing where you get short-term contracts and then you're out the door. So what is the real plan in that short time for you? How can you achieve in that short time?
Well, I would look at that, Adrian. I think you're making a really good point here.
Right.
And the big point that I would look at is who on the inside of the TTF here has really got any experience at football, whether it be coaching side of it, the technical side, or the business side of football. No one. There's no one in there that knows the game. They can't sit down with coaches and talk football because they don't know.
Yeah.
And do they know about the business side of the game? Clearly not what we've seen so far, because it's on the low. Everything's being kept down low. You're not hearing anything. You're not seeing anything in the television, newspapers, anything. Nothing coming out there. We need some positives from these local youngsters that are trying to play and make a name for themselves to get out there. But it's been stopped at the very top, Andrew.
Correct. And Terry, just to finish my point, the reality of it is that as much as we may see the change, they are not seeing the change, right? And I will keep singing that song. They are not seeing the change. There's certain things like that contracts is very important. You want development. When we lose against, let's say, Bahamas or Barbados beat us, or we draw against Barbados, we are going back to back in the days, but we are not studying what's happening now. Yeah. Where have we gone from 2006 World Cup qualification, right, to now? What have we invested in? What have we transformed? There is nothing. We don't even own a team bus.
Yes.
There is nothing. We do not have apparel selling at the stadium. We don't have these things. There's players is playing for next to peanuts, right? They're
yes.
getting paid 60 days later. We need to be real. We this is people. I am speaking on because I didn't hear it from you, Andre or Terry. I was involved, and the reality is that we will keep talking change, and we'll talk this one and that one. But it's the same old heads that keep signing these agreements and giving it to the new manager that is basically the scapegoat.
Yeah,
and he has to go and face the players, and then our players who's playing in Belgium. They are playing in Russia. Let's think about it. They're playing in Greece. They are traveling on economy class. Meanwhile, the opposition that you're playing against, they are first class. So we are in a mess. And FIFA is giving all the federations the same amount of money. So what are we really doing? That's it. It's frustrating. And we can't expect to get better results. And we want to criticize the coach. And we want to criticize the players. No, pal, we need to fix ourselves and within that TTFA.
If I could chime in here, well said, Terry. Terry does well said.
Yeah.
I can't disagree with him.
Yeah, absolutely.
I see that all the time. We don't invest in our own.
No.
Unless the outsiders see us and buy into us, we don't invest in our own.
Correct. Yep.
Recently, this star actress from Black Panther, returned to Guyana to Hero's Welcome.
But fantastic.
Usain Bolt didn't correct. Just reach there. He was invested in by the government of Jamaica correct. Years in advance.
Yes.
But we only recognized Keyshawn Walcott when he pelled the piece of Hawaii and he reached back to Trinidad.
Yeah.
But when he was leaving, where was the support? Our soccer warriors, how do we recognize them when they reached Germany?
Correct.
Before that, where was the support? We're going to take a commercial break, and when we come back, of course, I'll turn it back to you, girl, and you'll continue with your conversation. But hey, you touch a nerve there, catch me.
Talk is streaming at freedom106.5.com.
Welcome back, everyone, and we've got a top guy in the studio with us now, Mariri Louis Gonzalez, one of the top people in Trinidad and Tobago football at the moment. And why I'm saying that, he is the SSFL president. Good evening, how are you?
Very good, thank you very much. Very pleasant, good evening to everyone.
If you could just give the people out there just a little bit of refresh, let them know what you're all about, please.
That's going to be quite a lengthy but a critically important aspect of it. I'll just, in a synopsis, into the Secondary School Football League as the president, being appointed there on the 15th of April 2021, and being involved in the SSFL for 30 years plus in the various zones, including the E Zone, being chairman of the zone, being assistant chairman, secretary for a number of years, and also an exceptionally very experienced world FIFA assistant referee and a FIFA fitness instructor and a FIFA technical instructor, and being a teacher for 36 plus years. I just think it was necessary and fitting, based on the experience, the knowledge, the expertise, technical and otherwise, that I had what it takes to be able to assume the position of presidency. And that's why I went towards the position and went for the position, and I'm very thankful for being in the role, because the number of ideas that I have as the president, some of them already materialized for 2022, and we have quite a loaded off-season calendar, which means between February to August of 2023, we want to have a number of correlated SSFL activities that will enhance the holistic and the overall development of the student athletes. And I say student athletes because they are not actually athlete students, or they should not think themselves as that. Why? Because if you think yourself as an athlete student, then you will be focused on your athletic career first and forget your academic aspect of it.
Right.
But we are into the system of the MOE, which in this case is the Ministry of Education. And therefore, student becomes the main priority, of which the patron of the league is the Minister of Education, the Honorable Dr. Nyan Gaspedoli. And that being said, it means that over the years since 1964, we have been established, and I want to really credit the previous executives for the awesome amount of work that they would have done to bring the SSFL to the position it is right now. And it's about me receiving the baton with the executive and the general counsel and carrying it not just to another level, but a higher level.
Yeah.
And creating history and creating, more importantly, career pathways for these student athletes, so that their lives in the school system will be something that they could really feel highly appreciative of and rewarding at the very end of the exercise in school, in the school system.
Riri, could you just ask me, listen, going back over the years, this is going back to the UK when I was a kid, and you had all the local schools, all the community academies, they always backed their local football team. Mm-hmm. So in the northeast of England, it was Sunderland AFC, and all of the teachers, all of the community coaches used to network to make sure when them scouts came round to your area, these guys would pick out the best kids, hopefully to get them through to Sunderland AFC to go into the academy to produce for them and become a professional footballer. Now, this was at a time when football clubs were owned by corner shop owners. It wasn't as big as it is today. It's huge today. But when you look at, my God, 30 years in football, looking after schools, kiddies football generally, I mean, that's a wonderful commitment. I've got to call my hands up to that straight away. That's fantastic. Do you think you could get that similar type of buy-in where people are working together rather than working against each other for the betterment of the kids? Because that's where we are at the moment. Our pro league hasn't started again. Our other leagues haven't started again because of the different clashes at the higher end of football, if you like. But we're all answerable, really, to the kids that are out there that love their sport, love their team, their neighbourhoods, their everything. Do you think there's any way forward for them that way so we can maybe promote collaborations between football teams, academies, school teams, and a local football team, for argument's sake? What do you think?
Yeah, it is said that united we stand, divided we fall. And regrettably, that over the years, the SSFL, one of the more prominent and viably proficient school football leagues in the country, and that didn't happen overnight. It's because of the prudent planning off in the off season so that it can be executed in a very efficient and effective way during the season. You know, quite interestingly, many persons are of the feeling that we get sponsorship from the TTFA and from FIFA, but actually, while we get the support verbally, that's about it.
That's it.
Regrettably.
Wow.
We were looking forward with even discussion last year with Mr. Robert Haddad, the Normalization Committee, and the other members within the fraternity of the TTFA, which feel apparently a bit threatened, which there is no need to, a bit insecure. Rather than take the positives out of the entity of the SSFL, because you also have the Tiger Tanks with Mr. Dennis Latif. You also have Mr. Brian Jordan with the Next Level Community League. And we could go on to say various other individuals that are making really a positive and uplifting contribution.
Good.
And therefore, these are the entities that could come together and enhance the situation as it is. Now, what we presently have, and I really want to commend Mr. Robert Haddad and his team for coming forward and trying to make a contribution towards the advancement of the football in the country. But they are coming with a business mind head, acumen, as far as the understanding of the intricacies of football. I think they need help. I've seen it in meetings, and more of them are open for correction or adjustment if and where necessary to make the administrative arm of even chairing a meeting or the conductive in a meeting in a very effective way. So if they are open to that, it means they should be open to other areas. Like we have presently, if I may say, out of the various committees in the TTFA, one committee basically is functioning now, which is the referees department of the TTFA, and that should not be the case. But a lot of support is being given, and a lot of training is taking place with the crop of referees. But information is critically important, and I heard you mention it earlier. You were discussing it. One of the concerns the membership have, and SSFL being one of the delegates, is that we prefer not to be in a state of doubt or in a vacuum. Otherwise, that will raise a level of suspicion and skepticism. But you don't want that to happen. So inform us with authentic and correct information. Give us an update as to where you have reached.
Yeah.
So much so that quite recently we had follow-up meetings, even with the auditor. And that meeting was a very much of a great eye-opener. But that meeting was supposed to have been held months ago. Why? Because some concerns that were expressed by the membership, if only that meeting with the auditor, based on the financial structure and the payment being made for the creditors, if that was drawn to our attention before, then we would have been in a better position collectively to move forward. Okay, so we have reached that stage now. We can't.
So, Maria, is there good communication between the membership and the normalization committee, or is it fragmented?
It is building slowly and surely, but it could be faster.
Right.
Why? Because time is of essence.
Well, we're 3 years into that.
Yeah, the longer we stay, is the more competitions that the very same youths of the nation are being denied the privilege of taking part in. We have already missed 3-4 youth competitions within the CFU and CONCACAF.
Yes.
And that does not augur well.
No.
Because you would actually lose a whole generation, and you don't want that. Also, too, when Trinidad and Tobago is doing well, it raises the expectation of every citizen of the country, and most of the players, because those within the school system know that there is something to work towards.
Absolutely.
And therefore, they also now have the expectation to even work harder for scholarships or professional contracts.
Marie, that's so important. That point you just made is important because that's what I was holding on. So earlier you said that TTFA basically doesn't invest into the SSFL, right?
No.
What you just reiterated.
Hopefully the intention is to give some support along the way.
Right. So what
we
I'm
are optimistic.
Saying, the reality of it is that SSFL holds at least 1,250 footballers,
correct,
male per season.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
Right?
Minus that's the female.
Right? Mm-hmm. And I have minus the females there. So that is in 5 zones, and then we have a premiership division which holds 14 teams. Each team has
16
teams. So then we have maximum of registrations is 25 student athletes per secondary school.
On average, yeah.
So in terms of the partnership with TTFA, I think anyone will see that this is very important, especially for they are talking about youth development, they are talking about elite programs, they are talking about high performance programs. But it's very sad to see that when I play as an SSFL player, and I now finish play for, let's say, St. Benedict's, I won nearly everything, I have nothing to look forward to because there's no youth pro league. There's no way we need to be realistic. Not every player will get an opportunity to go abroad,
of course,
in January.
Yeah.
Right? There's no youth leagues happening. Then we'll talk about the Ascension League. And to be fair, Fergie put his money out, Richard Ferguson.
Yeah.
He put his money out, he got blanked, so there is no compliance with that. There is no compliance with GA Super Cup. There is no compliance with any other cup that wants to keep these youngsters active. So you, as the president of SSFL, is it possible that your league can be divided into two sections? One starting in March and then the other starting in September?
That could be a school of thought that could be considered. But the challenge and the major challenge in it is that we still fall under the umbrella of the MOE, Ministry of Education. Now, because we are part of the school system, we are not the only sporting discipline that is involved in the calendar of the school life and the year of activity. So we have to respect that there should be space to be given for the other sporting discipline, because even within the September to December, which is the football area given for the SSFL, inside of that we also have badminton, volleyball, netball. But because of the football being the most popular single sporting discipline in the world, and because of the organizational and the structure of the SSFL, and because of the very fervent drive with the sponsorship we have behind us, and I must take credit Mr. Dennis Latif for stepping forward and being the title sponsor, as we recognize the Ascension League being one of the sponsors, along with First Citizen, Coca-Cola, and Shell. Because having said that, it means that we still have to respect and give way for example, like right now is the cricket season within the what we call the SSCL. All right, you don't want to have to be competing with Y2 because some of the very same students yes. are not involved in one sport. They are multi-talented yeah. and multi-disciplined, yep. so they are involved in various other sports. So we have the various school of thought saying, is the season long enough? Should it be longer? Some feel that maybe two premiership games per week is a bit too much. Some feel it's not enough. Feel it should be one. Because even as we played in the 2022 just concluded season, and because of the truncated nature of it and because of having to come out of COVID-19, not 2 years not playing,
yes.
and we wanted really to restart again, to re-engage the student athlete and the schools and give them something of a semblance of getting back to a state of inverted commas normalcy, we decided we'll have the two groups of eight, still with the 16 teams. And I want persons to understand something. History was created last year in the sense that it was never done before, which is unlike any other year in the SSFL. While we would have had Sportsmax, again, one of our major media entity on board, along yes. with the local media houses, since 2015, they were here primarily and they continue to be, but they would have highlighted or broadcasted a few games in the Premiership Division. But with Tiger Tanks on board with us through Mr. Dennis Latif, the intention was, when we discussed with him, he went straight across the board. So there were games being broadcasted from Form 1, the Form yeah. 1 boys under 13, straight up to the Premiership Division. On any given day, you could have seen a live broadcast game of a Form 1 boys under 13, under 14 game, under 15 girls, under 16 boys, senior division boys or girls, championship division, and the Premiership Division. It means by that being the case, the expectation of media showing a game live on YouTube, as the case might be, even with those not live, they were still brought televised.
Yes.
With the expectation to have voiceover a few days after and be released. But what it also has done by doing that, any student athlete now who wish to have their own personal video in preparation for those who wish to pursue scholarships, now the opportunity is there because the matches are very easily available. So to come back to the question, Adrian, about the two seasons within the 12 month period, it's very challenging because of the number of other sporting disciplines. So what we need to do now is that time frame that we have, September to December, to give them the best that we have to offer so that the optimum level can be achieved by them and they can reap the rewards based on our efforts.
You see, I would come back to things that were said earlier. When you're looking at even the Pro League, this is before COVID, was stretching to maximum 4 months of the year. Mm-hmm. So you've got, and that was because of the lack of finance. Corporate Trinidad didn't have any confidence in the Pro League. They weren't putting any money out. It was very difficult for owners to put players on contracts. And I think it's a FIFA regulation that players have got to be on 6 monthly contracts because of the transfer windows today, twice annually. Mm-hmm. But that comes back to the same thing as I said earlier on. Is it possible, maybe for two different seasons there, Adrian, within 1 year? I hear what you're saying there. But bringing community teams together, along with the SSFL, making sure that there's a camaraderie together. Mm-hmm. I think where I'm trying to get past here is it seems like different bodies are clashing with each other, where we need to be bringing them together for the benefit of the youngsters that are on the ground that want to play their football mm-hmm. for more than just the 2 or 3 months of the year when league programs are going on. We're watching TV around the world, watching our Premier League championships, all of that, where they're playing for 10 or 11 months of the year. We've just come through World Cup. Is there anything else we could give and hand out and support to give our kids on the ground here in Trinidad and Tobago more opportunity over a longer period of time?
And certainly that can happen, but it can only happen if there's mutually respectable, mature, responsible discussion around the table by the various stakeholders, which means for the 12 months and without any lapping over one into the other, that, okay, this is the period that you will make your contribution and you move in into another entity, so that the players, now while you have that recovery period, whether the 1 month or the 2 month, but for the next 10 months, you will be engaged in football, whether it be the SSFL or the Youth Pro League or other entities that could be, are now considered as minor league because they're not sanctioned by the TTFA, but still making a valid contribution.
Yes.
And I speak about the Tiger Tanks under 20 and the Brand Jordan, Next Level Community. These are things now engaging now. Some of the very same players, many of them, are now involved in the Next Level Community League.
Yeah.
But make it official. Let it become part of the program and the system within the TTFA. But to do that now, you need to have a system.
Yeah.
But before you have the system, you need to have a policy. Before you have the policy, you need to have a philosophy. Question is there a philosophy?
Hmm.
Do we have a philosophy of our nature and the type of football we play in the country? Or is it that anything comes, goes? Which shouldn't be. Because it means that from the youth level, under 8 moving up, a player that is showing promise should be able to know the structure, the type, the style of football that we are playing.
Of course.
And as they're moving through, it becomes very easy, and also showing them other systems to play in the event that the coach wants to adapt or adjust.
You see, we're watching the rest of the world do that.
Mm.
All of their academies, as I said earlier on, these kids are specifically for different positions and they're experts in that position. You know, we all remember Pelé and Messi and Ronaldo's and all that. They're top goal scorers, great on the ball, they could do a trick on the ball. But some of the best footballers have been defenders and not quite as clever on the ball as that, but been brilliant, the Bobby Moores and people like that. But Andrea, I mean, what's your thoughts on it? I mean, there's some great points there I've just heard, and I think how we develop and bring the game forward in Trinidad and Tobago. What do you think?
Well, just to build on, you know, what you were saying, I think you were spot on with the, there's a disconnect with all the organizations. As a kid who grew up, you know, my parents were teachers. They always emphasize academics and sports. So I experienced it, what we are talking about now, where sometimes you look at all these different parties and you're like, okay, which direction do I go? And as a student and a young person, you do get overwhelmed and think like, you know, these people don't have their business in order. As a student, as a young person, it is overwhelming. And I think, as he said, it needs to be streamlined.
Yeah.
It needs people. And I think I said this at the beginning of this, mature people with integrity. You need some honesty in there where everybody could sit down, which it sounds like a dream now, but they sit down and, like, for example, the SSFL and all these people. Because what I've noticed is that there's a lot of organizations, but everybody has their personal agenda over the overall goal, which is to help football.
Yeah.
And yes, the goals of an organization is to sustain itself. But for example, at high school level, as you rightfully said, because I grew up around teachers, so I understand, there is a lot of sports to balance. Yeah. The students are sometimes forgotten. They are seen as products. And they, just like coaching education and pathways, just like with CXE and all those, you know, academic careers, any field that you go into, you need a pathway.
Yeah.
And I think there definitely needs to be some definitive, because people are always talking about the problems. You know what the problems are. But we need the right people. And as Adrian said as well, you know, probably a clean slate in some cases. Not everybody. There's some people that try to help, where they sit down and they try to find a streamlined way where everybody work together for the benefit of the players. And it sounds very simple. Like, you know, I could have made this a very complicated explanation, but it's as simple as that, you know, where you need the SSFL to work with the communities, to work with the TTFA, to have the right people to sit down and say, listen, you know, we have an overall goal, a style of play, as you said, philosophy, not just any playing style, but just the approach to things.
Yeah.
And I think that is something that just isn't there, because...
So, Andrea, is it that we need to hold people accountable for their positions?
Yes.
So when they come to the table...
KPIs and so
when
on.
When they're sat round that table and they're confirming they can do X, Y, and Z, should we make them accountable for exactly that? Because
definitely.
We're not seeing the game moving forward at all at the moment. From the outside looking in, it's very quiet.
Yeah.
And it's almost like they're trying to keep a lid on everything at the minute, which... it doesn't bear well because of the kids that love their sport, love their football.
And you're right, KPIs, you know, the performance indicators and so on, there isn't any info in a lot of cases. There's a lot of people, Adrian said it as well, there are people who are there, there are people who are trying, but we need those sort of metrics so people could be accountable. And these things eventually help on an overall scale with attracting sponsors and so on, because businessmen will look, okay, you're coming to me with this product, but it's just word of mouth.
Yes.
And their guys have been there for years, and they've been doing things, and some of them have been making a mess. But, you know, because there are no metrics involved to measure them, just like with coaches, if you don't win games, you know, you get sacked. Just like the people behind the scenes, you know, you do things. It has to be like that for everybody else. And if they're not doing their job, you get somebody else to do it. You know, it's democratic, I guess, but it's also absolutely necessary because we don't have that. We absolutely don't have that.
Well, I was interested there when you mentioned early on the sponsors that you've got involved with the SSFL.
Yeah.
The TTFE haven't got that.
No.
And that's because people buy into your kids.
Correct.
You know, communities are looking after their kids. Mm. They all support their school teams. And within, in and around that school team, you've got your academies in the area, and I love that in Trinidad. I think that's where you're pulling people together, and it's parents as well as the kids turning up, supporting their kids' school teams and all of that. But it's not going beyond that, and I wonder whether there's a kickstart that the SSFL could actually give football in general to get that community on side, to bring government on side, so we could move football forward at the higher levels to a better standard, bigger and better standard, Adrian.
Yeah, and that's how we are the ones in here seeing the importance of the SSFL.
Yeah.
I don't think people see the importance. I've coached in the SSFL, and I'm telling you, anyone that walks in the road, they will say the SSFL is basically just a league. Right, where kids participate. But when you are in it and you realize the importance of where our youths, remember, SSFL is exposing and giving kids from the ages of 11 to at least 20 years old an opportunity of life, another opportunity. So even if you don't make your secondary school team between the age of 12 to 15, you still to 17, right? And that's the reality. So I think it's important.
I've recognised, this is girls and boys, when you look at the support that the schools' games get, it's unbelievable.
Mm.
But you cannot, because of the poor advertising of the Pro League in the past, you couldn't get nearly the same support for them games. But it's the same sort of players playing for that team in what era. So we'll come back after this break and we'll discuss further, fellas.
This is the all-new Talk Radio Freedom 106.5. Speak your mind. Speak your mind.
Welcome back, everyone. I just want to, Mariri, I want to run something past you here. This is something that I think the whole world is screaming out here. VAR.
VAR, yes.
Video-assisted referees. What do you think, as a former assistant referee, the impact that has had on football today? How do you see it?
My response is a bittersweet one, in the context that the main intention of VAR is to assist with making decisions clearer and to have the correct decisions. In order for that to bring more confidence in the world, they need to be consistent with it. While, for example, the data is there to show, for example, before the World Cup in Russia in 2018, the correct decisions made by the on-field referees or match officials was just about maybe 94%. With the inclusion of VAR, it moved up to about 98%. So we saw an increase. What is a major talking point about it that could discredit the potency of the exercise is it is expected with VAR to be able to ensure that mistakes are not the mistakes that are made or the errors or the infringements or the infractions that are made by players are not missed. And therefore, to gain the credibility of everyone, they need to be more consistent in the application of it, to build on the confidence of, of everyone.
So, Andrea, I can't believe how long sometimes we see the game stopped, it goes to VAR, and then we take 3 and 4 minutes to make a decision on it. When your people that you're listening to in the studio, which are generally ex-footballers, they've already called it 3 minutes earlier. Yeah, that was definitely a penalty or not. What's your view on that?
Listen, it's a very divisive, you know, piece of technology. You know, I'm pro-technology.
Yeah.
But I see there's always going to be that human element where you make a decision. I've seen even in the World Cup as well. Actually, that's a better example. During the South American qualifiers.
Yeah.
Argentina was playing somebody, and Messi scored a goal. Everybody was celebrating.
Of course, you're an Argentine fan.
Yeah, I just had to throw that in somehow. Just had to slip that
in.
I
was just getting to like you.
Yeah. I'll never be back on the show now. That's it. But anyway, so, you know, there was this game. He scored the goal, and then everybody was celebrating. I was celebrating. And then we saw, you know, the usual thing that's associated with VAR now, where you can't really celebrate anymore. You're always kind of looking to see, you know, I want to. Should I celebrate? And then there was a play that took place 13 passes before the actual goal. And it was a foul.
Yeah.
But, you know, it raises, I think it's down to the individual. So, for example, I look a lot at Syria.
Yeah.
I think they usually get it mostly right in Syria. I think the Premiership, because of the exposure of the Premiership, it gets a lot of criticism where I think these guys, and, you know, you could correct me if I'm wrong, they are human. People forget this. Mm-hmm. And I think sometimes with the pressure of the crowd and the mayhem down on that pitch, which to us sitting in the studio looking, it's very clear and obvious, you know, interesting words I use there. I think some of them genuinely get overwhelmed.
Well, and there was a big decision, wasn't there, last weekend with the Manchester Derby.
Right, yeah.
Where Rashford is definitely offside.
Yeah, yeah.
And he's in the centre of the field in front of the goalkeeper.
Yeah.
Clearly obstructing player, if only visually. And the goal was allowed.
Mm-hmm.
Fernandes went through and scored the goal.
Mm.
But I'm just saying, you know, I loved it in the beginning. I thought it was fantastic because all the decisions were correct. Mm. Bang. And then move on.
Yeah.
But we seem, Adrian, to be taking too long over decisions now.
And I think that's the problem.
Yeah.
I think they take too long and then they start questioning themselves.
And I'm watching teams still playing while they're looking at the screens around the stadiums, wondering what's going to come next.
Yeah.
I think that's crazy. Can we not move on quicker, Adrian?
Yeah, I think I like the introduction of VAR, but my only issue with VAR is, especially speaking on this side of the world, is that you may only get a part of it as a player and be a part of it if you are maybe in the CONCACAF Gold Cup. I think it wasn't well introduced.
Yeah.
And I think that that's something that is very important so that everyone could be basically on the same page in terms of international teams, Caribbean teams, North American teams, African teams. Regarding the delays, it's part of the game. It happens in cricket. It's part of the game. I think that it's something that FIFA really and truly wants to get involved with in terms of the decision making. Yes, sometimes we may criticize VAR because some of the decisions may be harsh. But I think it's a learning experience. But what's important for me is that make everyone, every league, have that ability to get VAR. I think that's what bothers me about VAR.
I'm not going to criticise. The ones I will criticise are FIFA when it comes to VAR. Because they should have implemented this back in 1986.
I knew you were going there.
When Diego Maradona, that little bugger.
I saw that.
When he jumped up and clearly handled the ball to score that first goal for Argentina against that great England side.
You sound like you were there. Sounds like
my
there.
God.
Wow.
And you know what? I can still remember the referee looking at the linesman looking back at the referee, and at that time the linesman could only make offside decisions.
Yeah.
And throw-in decisions. And they're looking at each other, and I'm saying, he's right, yeah, it is. Yeah. It was a handball referee.
Yeah.
It looked like he was going to send me off, so I moved out the way.
Right.
But, Mariri, what do we do today to tighten VAR up?
I believe VAR is responsible for 4 match-changing situations in the game. And they are goal or no goal, penalty or no penalty, red card or no red card. And the other one is mistaken identity, so that the correct person is cautioned. And as of now, they are moving in the direction of ensuring that those four match-changing situations, when I say match-changing, because those four that I just mentioned could determine who's going to win the game or who could lose the game. But what FIFA is very mindful of is that one of the very main concepts of FIFA is to ensure that there is fair play. So that at the end of it, fairness is across the board to the both teams.
Yes.
Right? And that's why that's the original and main reason for the introduction of VAR that was actually created in 2010 in Holland, all right, which FIFA has appreciated and brought on board, because it's all about ensuring that if the match officials, based on human error, makes the mistake, that the technology will assist. Now, what the referees have to be mindful of, which we train them to be prepared for, is that the technology could sometimes fail. And you'll just have to revert to your human ability to make the decision.
Yes.
All right? So the training should be a very smooth and good collaboration between the talent that you have as a human being and how the technology could enhance it in the event. Now, what is more important here is this. VAR, just like we tell the assistant referees, you do not insist, you assist. The referee, who is the main person in the middle, makes the decision. So what VAR does actually is make recommendations, suggestions, proposals. Yeah. Listen, I'm telling you something has happened. You could have a look, but it's your choice.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Right? So the referee now can decide if he wishes or she wishes to review the review camera, the screen as the case might be, and he or she can actually change his or her decision, but it must be done before the game has been restarted. If, for whatever reason or reasons, the game is restarted, as glaring as the error was before, it can't be changed. And that's how the rule is under the laws in FIFA. But you could change if you haven't restarted the game. Mm-hmm. So I believe it is a good introduction into the game of football. We need to tighten it up a bit as far as not taking too long. Why? Because football is a dynamic game.
Absolutely.
The more it flows, it's better.
That's where I was coming from.
But you really want to also ensure that the decisions that are being made in the game are totally correct, so that there is fairness across the board when it comes to decisions that arrive at and the eventual result of the game, so that football wins from it and the world is happier from it.
Okay, guys, I have one question as we're talking the VAR. What are the rules with regarding to how a referee can refer to it? Is it that there's something specific that a referee can say, listen, like in cricket they do the sign and they look for it?
Yeah.
Is there something we could probably educate the public on that?
You've got the man right there to answer that
one. Good question. Two things could happen here. If the referee wishes, like for example, if there's an appeal and the referee acknowledges that there's appeal, especially if he feel he or she may have missed something, then they could now ask for assistance, right? Or from his headset, he will be informed something just happened on the field that we may wish for you to have a look at the screen.
Right.
Now, he could accept that request from them, or he or she could ignore it. No, however, you want to make sure that if you ignore the suggestion that is made, you better be right.
Yeah. Correct.
Because in the debriefing session the following day you have with the referees, if they were to show you the evidence where the error was really made and you ignored it, then you will be released with the first plane returning back to your country with no expectation to get further appointments.
I'm assuming that is things that they haven't seen, things that might have happened behind the back or players might have been in front of their visual sight of what's gone on there.
So, for example, the referee from Poland in the final between Argentina and France, who did quite a remarkable job overall. What he did was, as much as possible, not refer to VAR.
Yeah, I noticed that.
He depended basically on his ability to manage the game.
Good.
Because you don't want to get dependent, because it means that it could also be perceived by the world of a lack of confidence that could be created in you, the individual. And it could also affect the match official's ability to perform, because they always have to be referring to VAR. So you find they're encouraging the referees only refer to VAR if and when necessary, but make sure that the right decisions are made, even if it takes some time, because there's no set time to refer to the camera.
Yeah.
All right, although there's an average of about 83 seconds to try and make a decision and not go beyond that. But at the end of it, it must be that the correct decision is made.
Yeah.
And either the referee, if he or she feels, they could refer to VAR, or VAR may suggest to you, have a look at it, but you don't have to.
So, Mariri, something else that came up over the World Cup that I found quite amazing was at the end of each half, we were seeing 6 to 9 minutes add-on time for World Cup games. I think, can you remember that, guys?
Yeah.
And I'm looking at this, and I'm just looking at players running out of steam. That, mm-hmm. that 5 and 6, 9 minutes add-on player was killing the game. What okay. was that all about?
As an active match official, this is quite interesting if one was an individual was to check on it. We have what you call running time and playing time. And what is important, again, we're coming back to that level of equality, equity, and also fairness and fair play. Now, a goal can be scored in the last second.
Yep.
That could be instrumental in influencing the outcome of the game. So if you were to deny a team the playing time, so every time there are stoppages in the game, stoppages, for example, injuries, substitution, etc., etc., that time is considered, and it now shifts across to added on time where the fourth official will so show
right.
the substitution board. What is more important now is that because there's so much more at stake with the millions of dollars being given to countries.
Yes.
First and foremost, appearing in a World Cup,
yeah.
and then your position at the final round at yes. the end of the World Cup. And then also players now and coaches knocking on the door for even more prominent contracts.
Yes.
That every single second or minute is of vital importance, and therefore FIFA has acknowledged, listen. And that is why you see the referee has two watches, one yeah. with running time
yeah.
and with playing time. And as much as possible, you try to ensure that the playing time is given and not necessarily the running time, which sometimes could
fair enough.
Could be 4, 5, 6, 7 minutes.
Yeah. So over the course of the Premier League so far, my team, Tottenham Hotspur, my God, we've been on the receiving end of so many bad VAR decisions, I can't believe. And we should have had between 5 and 10 minute play on time at the end to try and get back into it, Adrian.
Yeah.
What do you think?
Terry,
VAR's a good thing or not?
Terry, I understand that.
When you say it like that.
It's a good thing. It's really good. I know it's really disappointed on your side with Tottenham, but nevertheless, it's technology is always
it's
good.
A big step
yeah,
forward
it's
for the
big
game,
step
isn't it?
Forward.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah. Andrea?
I think I know. I understand your pain, Terry. I mean, even at the World Cup, you know, that 10 minutes against the Netherlands
yes.
was, I think I aged about 15 years at that game. But I think that's just the precision of the game now. You know, yeah. I think back in the day, I guess, and you could correct me if I'm wrong, you know, now the use of technology, those little windows where the game has stopped now has yeah. become so precise where we think maybe, wow, 10 minutes is a long time. That's ridiculous. But maybe that's just now it's more accurate now.
Yeah.
And we're finally seeing, and it totally changes the game. 10 minutes yeah. is a long time. And as you're saying, yeah. that could a lot can happen in 10 minutes, and players have been conditioned to play 90 plus, maybe 10 tops.
Yeah.
And then, you know, actual proper, you know, 10, sometimes even more than that. You know, that totally, and I think in a fun way, except if you're a Tottenham fan or maybe an Inter Milan fan like myself. That 10 minutes is insane, but I think I like it. I understand it's different, but I think it's a game evolving.
Yes.
And I think it kind of adds to that little, you know,
so we're all on
element.
Side, really, then we're all in favor.
Yeah.
And if I may add also to within the the added on time, you could also add on time.
Yes, yes.
Yeah. Which means, for example, in the added on time, it's five. If it's 5 minutes and there are stoppages, like injuries, substitution, etc., then you could add on time within the added on time.
So do you think we could ever have VAR in Trinidad and Tobago?
Yes, we can.
You think so? But we'll need 24-hour game.
We need time.
They'd find more time than enough. Come on, man. That can never happen.
Test cricket,
Because the average price of actually the system is about $2.3 million.
Wow.
Yeah. No. US, that's it.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
And Adrian Botin shared a very critically important point early on when he mentioned, and this is where I was a bit peeved about, because a lot of explanation had to be given around that time in the last World Cup, not the last one in Qatar, but in 2018 in Russia. It should have been, and FIFA should take responsibility for that. I mean, Europe is leading out of the six confederation because of the financial situation and position that they're in. So actually, in that World Cup, that was the establishment of the VAR, there was no one from the CONCACAF region on the VAR appointed team.
Wow.
More from Europe, one or two maybe from Asia, just about two, and two from CONMEBOL. What should have really happened is that all the confederation, all six, should have been exposed to it. Not only the confederations, but the various member associations.
Yes.
And the world should have been so guided and informed about it. Mm-hmm. So when you do it in the World Cup, it wouldn't be new information people experiencing for the first time.
Yeah. Well, I didn't realize that. I think that's a big part of it, and I agree with you absolutely there. Mm-hmm. So, guys, listen, something else. I want to move on a little bit here, and we've touched on the rising star over the last couple of shows. And Adrian has pulled out of Norway, and I can't wait to hear this, and this is for the people out there listening. There's a terrific young kid, an 8-year-old kid out there, Giovanni Mills. Adrian, just give us a bit of background.
Yeah, Terry, Giovanni is our rising star of this week. Giovanni is 8 years old. He found his love for football around 16 months. And Giovanni has a personal coach, and also he attends a coaching school where he participates in matches. At this coaching school, Giovanni plays with under 10 and under 8 age group. He trains with a U10 because he outplays the U8 in technique, strength and skills. Giovanni has been featured in the local newspaper and television stations. He was also featured in a television show for children in Norway performing his dribble skills. In August of last year, Giovanni attended Ajax soccer camp in Netherlands, where he received his official report card on his training with compliments on his dribbling, style of play, first touch, physical abilities, technical skills, etc. Additionally, Giovanni participated in the Soccer Youth All-American Series last November in Dallas, Texas. And at this tournament, he was selected for the All-American Golden Cup, and scouts considered him as one of the best young players while participating in the series events. He also attended a camp in Sweden, and in April this year, Giovanni scheduled to train in Germany. Most importantly, Giovanni's parents is Trinidadians, but he was born in the USA. So that's a big part for our head coach now. So he will not be complaining because that's his grandparents' third generation. His parents is Trinidadian, so I think that's an easy passport for us.
So, guys, just listen to that. This kid's been all over the place already.
Insane,
and he's going into top clubs, academies. He's getting report cards, what he's got to work on, how he's got to do things. This is bringing us back to, Adrian, things that we've discussed over the last couple of shows, whereby football today, and I look at all of these academies that are supported by professional football clubs and even into community football clubs, where they're working on the kids for certain positions in the playing field today. And this kid's done so much travelling, played in so many different countries. Yes, he's from the USA. The USA are putting loads of money at the moment into development of football. They've got the World Cup coming in 2026. And my God, USA, they're team captain, 23 in the last World Cup, just gone in November, December. So they're going to be prepared to the max for the World Cup coming Canada, Mexico and US here. They'd be ready for it. But it shows me this is where kids have got to be looking today. How do we here in Trinidad and Tobago, how do we facilitate that?
Well, most importantly, Giovanni lives in Trinidad and Tobago.
Yeah.
So the reality is his parents has...
So what is he doing now, Adrian? So, that's what I'm saying.
So that's the thing. His father has hired a personal coach for him because he realizes that there's nothing happening. So when we look, and you keep talking the USA, Terry, and we were part of the experience in the US,
yeah,
where our staff was seven persons,
yeah,
and the USA had 24 persons as their backroom staff.
Yes.
And something like that, like for example, we were looking for the tactics on the television. We were looking at the game afterwards,
yeah,
while the USA head coach was just looking at his iPad.
Yep.
You understand? So yes, that's the big gap in terms of development, and it's very important that Giovanni, and I told his dad that today, I kudos to him, he has invested a lot in his son, he's 8 years old. But where the most exciting moment for me is, will he, when he reaches at a 12 years, 13 years, and he lands a contract, right, how will we be able to manage him? Then there's players also that was talented like Gio at this age. I don't need to mention.
So are we saying to parents here in Trinidad and Tobago, are we saying to them, get online, check out these football drills for your
correct
kids, and you implement them on the, because they've got little else?
Yeah.
Is that what we're saying?
If I may add, during the COVID period, COVID-19, when the SSFL was affected tremendously, like the whole country and the world, and because we still wanted to keep in a semblance of football skills among the student athletes so that they wouldn't lose interest, we actually had a skills competition, but it was done online,
yeah,
since we couldn't be engaged physically, face-to-face. But this Giovanni Mills, young man, at what, 6 years of age, doing 166. And Josiah Ochoa, who is from St. Benedict's College, he's the winner of the ball juggling competition, which actually we had almost about 22 participants.
Very good.
And my intention as the president is to have a ball mastery competition in the off season. Mm. Because remember earlier on I said we will have a number of correlated activities. For example, the ball mastery. We want to also engage in a pilot project in futsal.
Yes.
And get futsal teams within the school itself. Beat soccer also. Health and nutrition. Strength and conditioning. In the intricacies and the laws of the game. The amendment to the laws, which are really, really very, some of them are very, very, very pertinent and relevant to what is happening, and the understanding and the very tight and close line and understanding between the laws of the game, the phases of the laws of the game, the players need to understand, and the coaches need to understand. And then more importantly, getting the schools to engage and have and running a TTFA referees department.
Yes.
Referees recruitment drive. So you could have those students in particular who are doing physical education for CSEC and CAPE, of which football is part of the examinable aspect of it. They would also have that as an advantage. And even more importantly, to create a platform clearer and the structure where the career pathways for those who are interested in pursuing scholarships or professional contracts, and those who can or will not be able to move in that direction, we still create the entities locally here. So those who may be very gifted in business or
yeah,
science,
yeah,
that we could also now create the avenues so they can move into that direction coming out of the SSFL.
Well,
Maria, in the off-season.
I mean, years ago in football, there used to be a thing called late developers, where players weren't as good early and then came through late and were fantastic. Some went on to be top internationals. And I love the sound of having these competitions around the country whereby they're testing their skill sets. Not necessarily playing games, because, listen, I've been to games on the Savannah here in Trinidad and Tobago where parents get involved, everybody gets involved, and it turns into a melee before you get anywhere.
Mm-hmm.
But really bring it on the kids, because it's their attitude towards it, it's their mentality, how strong they are, because sometimes they'll make a mistake. Can they continue in the competition and do well? I love the sound of that, and I think that sort of thing would encourage sponsors to come out, because it's fairly simple setup. We done it a little while ago with Nestle, and that was a Barcelona skill sets that we developed here, and it went down fantastic. And that's something that could get a little bit of TV coverage along the way, give the kids a little bit of exposure.
Yep.
What do you think?
Yeah, I think I use the word evolution a lot today on the show, because I think there is a trend of thought. I'm trying to say this in the most respectful way, where, you know, when we evolve with technology, sometimes the older heads can't adapt. They're quick to say, oh, these kids now, they don't go outdoors enough. But, you know, kudos for that solution.
Yeah.
I think that is the kind of thinking we need.
Yeah.
Like, for example, coming up with that solution to have those kids dribble and do things online. That's what they relate to. That's what they respond to.
Yeah.
You know, like I said, I grew up around teachers. You know, different methods of getting kids to learn.
Yes.
And coaches as well.
Of course.
Where you find ways to tap into the current generation rather than sit down and be like, okay, these kids, I don't understand these kids. You find a medium that they can relate to. You know, music, technology, and so on. Even video games, esports. That was normally a very taboo thing in the past.
Yes.
Esports is a
huge,
massive thing now.
Huge. Yeah.
Big money. Back in the day, my parents, I wish it was around in my time. But unfortunately, you know, it's also something that helps the cognitive ability of players. So, you know, these guys definitely, and gals, definitely benefit from finding that middle ground. And I think that's the direction all parties need to be going.
Yeah, I tend to agree with that. I think the kids out there would love it, wouldn't they?
Yeah.
You imagine them turning up to show their skill sets. I think that would be absolutely fantastic.
And use social media to your advantage.
What's your thoughts, Adrian?
Yeah, Terry, you all have covered it, and I think that's... I can't add anything there. I totally agree, and I must say, today was a great show. I know we'll be back next week, Monday, with Premiership action back on. I know this weekend...
Come on, you Spurs.
Yeah, so I know our listeners, they'll be looking... awaiting those results next week, next week Monday, and we are here.
Well, Mareri, Andrea, Adrian, it's been a great show.
I just have one thought before you guys wrap. I mean, I don't want this young lad to be another Keyshawn Walcott scenario where the world embraces him and then we now recognizing who he is.
Yes.
Final thought before we go: is there anything in place with this young man, government or even private sector wise, that can embrace his talent and maybe encourage others who are in the shadows, who we don't even know about? Giovanni, I mean, we're looking at him here.
Yeah.
And the little lad is quite skillful. Is there anything?
Well, you know, I think there are people exactly like you that care and want these kids to do so well. See these kids that have developed their skill sets, and whether it be football, cricket, whatever sport it is, help them to get from here into something much better. We need to be a part of the development of that. People behind the scenes, and Mr. President, I think that's something that you could help with with these kids. Could be fantastic.
Yep.
Okay, guys.
Yeah. Listen, thanks very much, and for all you listeners out there, hope you've been tuning in, listening to that. Got some great people around the table tonight, and it's all about your kids. It's all about football, what we can do for your kids, how we can help the nation move forward. From Terry Fenwick and the rest of the crowd, good night.
Talk is streaming at freedom106.5.com.